Let's take it from the top.
KMOX.
Anyone who is a regular listener of KMOX knows if it's a holiday, it will be Hancock and Kelly in studio. No Chris and Amy.
Happy Labor Day, everybody.
Happy Labor Day to you, John Hancock.
And remember, you can listen live on the Odyssey app and 314-436-7900
to call us.
Or text us here on the Chris and Amy Show, because we get the text messages, although I don't get the text message. We're also streaming live on the, where are we?
We're on YouTube.
We got
Chris and Amy Show.
We're on the Twitter over here.
104.1 FM.
Are we on the Facebook too, James? We're on the Facebook as well. So
11:20 a.m.
Yeah, you can watch this today, or 104.1 FM, Mike.
Yeah, I said them all.
Yeah. All right.
We're out there. We did all the precursors. Happy Labor Day to you.
Back at you, big boy. It's a big day for you,
growing
up in the labor movement as you did.
Yeah, growing up, I would go down to the Labor Day parade. Can't remember one I ever missed in my life. I think they quit those just right around COVID. Now they
used to be every year.
They had it every year.
Down Market Street.
It was a huge parade. Now it's moved up to the Florissant area, and it's I think it's the week before Labor Day that they have a parade now. But regardless, Labor Day, one day where
why would you have a Labor Day parade a week before Labor Day?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And why would you have a Labor Day parade in Florissant rather than
downtown? I mean, Florissant's got God's country
nice,
up there,
yeah.
North County. Yeah, I'm a North County product myself.
Are you? Pattonville High School?
Yeah, but even before that, I was in Berkeley, Missouri.
Were you a Pattonville Pirate?
I was a Pirate. I'm in the, you know, I don't like to talk.
Whatever.
But I am in the Pattonville Hall of Fame.
For what?
For my many exploits, both academically and otherwise.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
How did they inform you that you made the Hall of Fame?
Got a letter in the mail, and my little picture's up there in the hallway.
Did you show up for a ceremony where they told you you're a part of the Hall of Fame? Get a ring?
No.
Huh. When you were in school, this was kind of fading away by the time I got to high school.
Yeah.
But there were these things called Letterman's jackets.
Yeah.
Did you have a Letterman jacket?
Well, that would require you to have been on one of the athletic teams. And, you know, I was quite the basketball player.
The Swan, I think, is the nickname.
The Stork.
Yeah, the Stork.
All legs. Had a wicked shot from the corner. You know, again, I don't want to.
All legs, right? Still no jump.
But there I was in my. Entering my sophomore year, going through tryouts, and I didn't make the team.
Is that right?
Yep. And
so you don't have a Letterman jacket?
I don't.
I bet it was an ugly green and white, right?
Green and
it was the
black.
White.
You had black sleeves on that thing.
It was green and black.
Very handsome looking jacket back in the day. And
if they still make Letterman's jackets.
Played soccer and basketball, played a little baseball. The girls were playing softball.
No, you
out
didn't
there.
Play. You weren't on the teams, were you?
No, but I often gave announcements.
Yeah.
And
were you on the debate team?
Oh, yes.
How did you score in debate?
Well, you know, they have, you know, different levels of debate. You got the diamond and the silver, and the highest level was the ruby.
Ah.
And the highest level was something they called the double ruby.
Mm.
And the double ruby required one to collect a total of over 500 points in the debate society for various and sundry accomplishments.
Right.
And if memory serves, I was a double ruby award.
Wow, that's impressive.
With the Pattonville Forensics team.
Now, with football and basketball, soccer, you have a schedule. You know that you're going to play 25 games if you're in soccer or whatever it's going to be. Is there a schedule for debate?
Of
like
course.
That you know that there
yes.
are, how many debates are there a year? Five, six?
Oh, no. A dozen?
A dozen?
15, something like that.
And what
that.
Would you do to hype up for your debates? Did like the school show spirit? Did they
no.
support you guys?
No. But you would, you know, you'd have these tournaments, and so you would travel, and sometimes they'd be local. Sometimes you'd travel a bit for a tournament. And I get a little confused because it's been so many years ago between high school debate and then college debate.
Is there much difference?
Well, college debate, we traveled all over the place.
Yeah. The actual format, though, and stuff?
So it was a two-man debate. So you had a partner, and you were up against another team and their partners. In high school, we debated what was called policy debate, where you would advocate for a certain policy.
Okay.
In college, I debated CETA, Cross Examination Debate Association, which was a values topic. So you'd have a resolution that you would have to either defend or oppose. And one of the resolutions that I had in college was resolved that U.S. military support of non-democratic governments is justified.
Hmm.
So you had to build a case, an
affirmative
case. For
world leadership and world stability, yeah. That kind of like.
Yeah, and so, you know, our case was aircraft to Saudi Arabia.
Uh-huh.
And that was our affirmative case that we would try to prove, and then the other team would have to disprove that that's really not good for the United States, and you have a debate about it.
Wow.
The other topic we had was resolved that membership in the United Nations is no longer beneficial to the United States.
Wow, how telling is that?
And this was, you know, long 30 some years ago.
Right. Ahead of your time.
Yeah, we were.
Were you for staying in the UN?
You had to be both.
Oh, you had to. It's like, what do they call that type of learning? They teach it in law.
Well, you have what they call a whatever.
Not Freudian, but it's...
The Socratic method?
Yeah, Socratic, yeah.
Yeah, well, you have to be prepared to debate both sides of the topic.
It's impressive that you were able to do that.
And that
anything fun
year,
or was it always politics?
Well, it was a values resolution. Those are the two I remember verbatim. But the year that we did the UN, my partner, Brian Ford, who had gotten kicked out of Emory University in Atlanta.
Nice.
Very good school, very good debater, mm-hmm. Brian. And so he ended up at UMSL, as did I, because I'd gotten kicked out of the journalism school
at Mizzou. Happens to all of us at one time or another.
And so we were debating that topic, and we never, that entire season, never lost a negative round.
Is that right?
Never. Not one negative round all season. We won probably five or six tournaments.
Uh-huh.
And so we get to the Nationals.
Okay.
And we're cruising through, and we go, the way you do it, you've got like five preliminary rounds and you debate, and then the teams with the best records go on to the elimination rounds, which is like a bracket.
All right.
So and the bracket was the final 16, and we won and we won and we won, and we get to the semifinals.
Okay.
And it's Princeton versus the University of Missouri at St.
Louis. Yeah, Dane Manuel did it.
And it was a 5-judge panel.
Uh-huh.
We flipped a coin. We got negative.
Okay.
Which we had never lost all
season. You won
all
the negatives. Yeah.
Because we proved in our negative case that the United Nations had prevented nuclear war at least 3 times in its history.
Right.
And that nuclear war would destroy the planet and so forth and so on. And so clearly membership in the United Nations does benefit the United States. That was our case.
Okay.
And we debated out with these guys. We beat them. I'm just telling you, I've sat through dozens and hundreds maybe of these debates. We won that debate. We lost on a 3-2 decision.
Really?
In the semi, because the judges gave it to Princeton.
Wow.
And that was the end of my debate.
Any of those Princeton debaters you debated against wind up on the Supreme Court or something?
Yeah, probably.
That's usually a school that you can
probably. Yeah, you know, but that was tough.
Good for you that you got involved in the debate. Is it something you had to seek out, or did the teacher come to you and say, hey, you know what, John, you'd probably be good at this?
You know, I took a speech class in 7th or 8th grade, and at the time, there were a whole bunch of different events you could do, so debate was just one. You had other events called extemporaneous speaking, where you draw a topic, you'd have 30 minutes to prepare, and then you give a 30-minute speech.
30 minutes?
Yeah.
On an extemporaneous. How long is to talk for 30 minutes?
You did. There was another category called humorous interpretation, where you take a text and deliver it.
Okay.
Is a soliloquy, and that was one that I did quite a bit. There was dramatic interpretation. I never did that.
Do you ever want to hear anybody talk for 30 minutes straight?
Sure, buddy.
Who?
Oh, anybody. We got the St. Louis speaker series coming up.
But a 30-minute straight conversation that you just make up after learning the topic.
Well, you don't make it up. You got the topic, and then you got
to
do your research.
But you only get 30 minutes to research it. And maybe, it was
an 8-minute speech. A 30-minute preparation and an 8-minute speech.
I think that may make a little bit more sense.
That could be. But you can't go over, and you don't want to go so far under that costs you points. I mean, you got to be right in that sweet spot, 7:45 or so. And you got to have your introduction, your meat, and your recap all within that 8 minutes. And that would be extemporaneous speaking.
Nice. Could you tell when you were connecting with a certain judge?
Oh, yeah.
You know, like
that was my
Miss Thompson right there.
Yeah,
she's digging my chili.
So the reason Brian and I were partners and it went so well is that Brian was a textbook debater. He took every argument they made. He would respond to it with two or three points. And then if they missed one of his responses, he would what they call pull it through in his second speech. They didn't respond to this. You have to give us that point. And he would. So he was a textbook debater. I was now judge.
Yeah.
Let's think about this.
Take a moment.
Yeah. And so that was kind of my shtick.
Yeah.
And between the two of us, it was a pretty good deal.
He is John Hancock. I'm Michael Kelly. We'll debate each other all morning until noon. You stick around with us here on our Labor Day. I went to the Hill yesterday.
Hey.
Wait till I tell you what I saw.
Can't wait.
After this, Camo X. Sean Hancock, I'm Michael Kelly. You're listening to the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX. Happy Labor Day to you. Hope you're out enjoying this great weather.
September 1 is upon us.
Yeah.
August seems like it just whoosh.
Yeah, you know, I think we're getting a head fake on this weather right now.
Cardinals testing us to see how many games they can lose in the month of August, and they succeeded swimmingly.
But we're getting a head fake, right? Because this almost feels like the end of September. Rather than the beginning of
that's
September.
That's St. Louis weather, buddy. There are 12 seasons in St. Louis weather.
What season are we in now?
We're in the faux fall.
Faux fall?
Yeah. And so what happens is you go through, you know, you got winter.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got the faux spring.
Okay.
And then winter.
Right.
And then you get the blooms.
Okay.
And then you get the frost. And then you get spring.
Okay.
And
that's about what, 4 or 5 days?
And then you get summer. then you get the
Saharan summer.
You get summer and then you got hell on fire summer.
Yeah, we had that.
And then you get the faux fall, which is the season that we are
right
currently
now
enjoying.
Okay.
And then you get summer 3 comes after that. And then you get fall. And then you get faux winter.
Yes.
And then you get you get fall, and then the leaves change.
Yeah.
And then you get your faux winter.
Right.
And then you get fall 2.
Uh-huh.
And then you get winter again. Ah. That's how it works.
Well, it's so simple. I don't know why anybody would have any trouble with it.
I know.
And, you know, of all the places, do you ever wonder why your relatives, like there's this great big country from sea to shining sea.
All the time.
Right? They
all
could be
the
on the
time.
East Coast. They could be. They stopped right here.
Let me tell you about the Hancocks, Michael.
Yeah, what were they thinking?
Brilliant people, the Hancocks. they were living in the lovely Shenandoah Valley. In what is now West Virginia.
West
of course,
Virginia.
Then it was just Virginia. And at about the time of the Revolution, they were there. John Hancock.
They ran from the war?
I'm sure they fought. But,
yeah.
And then, for reasons unknown to me,
right,
they picked up and they started moving west. There's so many Americans
yeah,
were
gold,
doing at that
property,
time.
Property, land,
very
life.
Very early 19th century, 1800s.
Uh-huh.
And they start moving west. And they get to Posey County, Indiana.
Mm.
Lovely place.
Posey County.
Yeah. Just north of
Indianapolis?
What do you call it? Louisville.
Ooh, okay.
And so they're there, and then they get a little restless, and so they matriculate down to Tennessee, where my great-great-great-grandfather Edwin met the lovely Mary, what was her last name?
Doesn't matter, Hancock.
Well, she's Hancock now.
Right.
And they settle there in Tennessee, and they don't like it.
Right.
You know? So we're in about 1829.
Uh-huh.
And everybody's moving out way west at this point.
California, baby.
They're heading
gold
that way.
There is.
And so Edwin and Nancy, it was Nancy Lipscomb Anderson was who he married. Hancock, Nancy Hancock.
Okay.
Ed and Nancy, they headed from Tennessee.
So how did they get into Missouri?
That's what I'm about to tell you,
Michael. We're trying to get there.
I'm trying
to speed it up.
So they're moving westward. Now we're in the late 1820s, early 1830s. And they're traversing, and they cross the Mississippi River.
Hey now.
And what was then just
imagine what they thought when they saw
that river.
A wild
frontier. We are only at this point less than 2 decades removed from Lewis and Clark.
Uh-huh.
And they're moving westward there. And they get on Interstate 44.
Uh-huh.
And,
No such thing then.
Well, that's right.
It was just been a trail.
It was back then. It was Route 66. So they're moving down Route 66, and they come to Rolla.
Uh-huh.
Honey, and look, nothing going on here.
Can't get any better in this place.
No, it can't.
Oh, really?
They thought a little further west will probably do it.
Uh-huh.
And so they begin moving, and they cross into what is now known as Pulaski County.
Wow.
Yeah, home of Fort Leonard. Well, this was before Fort Leonard Wood existed, Mike.
Right.
And they're in this wilderness, rocky, hilly, Ozark land.
Uh-huh.
It's hilly.
Yes.
It's rocky.
Rocky.
It's desolate.
Right.
And they decide, this is it. We're going to become farmers. And they become farmers on the rockiest ground you could possibly imagine. And they settle there and form the little Hancock homestead.
How about that?
And when poor Ed died, and he would have died in 1838.
Uh-huh.
And at the age of 38, his possessions, and we've got his last will and testament.
Okay.
We still have Ed's last will and testament.
All right.
The man had a three-legged horse.
Are you kidding? A real, honestly, there was a three-legged horse?
That's what the document. How does that even work? That's why you got three legs.
Don't you have to put a horse down once it breaks its leg?
Well, that's like today. They didn't have glue back then. And so he had a three-legged horse. He had two dodos.
A bird?
I don't know what they were.
A dodo? It honestly says that?
Or a doo-doo. It's a D-O-D-O.
D-O-D-O.
Some kind of farm implement, I'm
guessing.
Let's
hope it's a farm implement.
He had one.
That's what it was.
One tin cup.
Uh-huh.
And then he had, I think he had a jacket and a pair of pants and a pair of shoes.
Can you believe they took time to document this stuff?
Well, he had to pass it on to his son Gilbert.
His three-legged horse?
Well, the horse probably didn't last that much longer,
no.
I would think. You know, once Edwin died, he was, you know, taking care
right.
of the thing. And then, of course, Gilbert, famous for enlisting in the North during the Civil War when they were going to hang him if he didn't.
Oh, really?
And so he ends up enlisting with the North in 1864.
At least you're on the
timing.
Right side of the world.
Pretty good timing if
right.
you're going to get into the Civil War. 1864
right
was a good starting point.
Uh-huh.
And he was the last Hancock to see battle.
Is that right?
And yeah. By,
no, nobody since then.
No. His son, George Washington Hancock.
Do you have bone spurs?
Huh?
Did you have bone spurs?
No,
or you
I
wouldn't
didn't.
Have been old enough to file for the draft.
No, no. George Washington Hancock avoided things, and his son Clifford was born in 1900, so he was too young for World War One.
Huh.
And then my dear father, Paul, did serve in the Army in 1946 after the war. He was 18 years old.
Nice.
So that's my family lineage there for you, big
I don't
boy.
Have the lineage story you do,
well, you go
but
back
I
to-
do question what my people were thinking, like, did they come on one of these days when they decided this is the place we'll settle? The weather's perfect here.
Well, you had the famine over there.
It was on one of these 4 days a year that the weather's just impeccable.
Yeah.
Because if they came in the middle of the summer or they came in the middle of the winter, I have to wonder about the judgment of the Kellys that settled.
Do you know when the Kelly side of your family came to America?
No. I should find out. I'm afraid to do the genealogy thing.
Because you might not be Irish.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to find out I'm not Irish. Could you imagine?
Yeah, you're Irish.
Like you spend your whole life thinking one thing. Well, you think you're a Hancock. What if you do your genealogy and find out?
I've done it.
Okay. But what if I found out I'm not Irish? I'm like German or something.
Well, you probably have a lot going on.
I'd be embarrassed.
I mean, we all
like,
do.
I've been living a lie.
But your people came over from Ireland probably when they couldn't find a potato over there.
Well, let me just tell you, you still can't find any food over there. It still stinks.
Yeah.
Food in Ireland
back
is
then,
terrible.
Back then, Michael, I don't know if you've read your history. Well, I know the answer to that. Back then, they couldn't grow a potato to save their souls.
There was a famine.
And so now you got all these Irish people over there, no potatoes.
Right.
And so a bunch of them got on the boat at that point, and they said,
came here.
There's potatoes in the new world.
And did you know there's like 70 million people of Irish
lineage
living in the United States now?
Yeah, yeah, and think about
it's born in the country of Ireland.
Think about the history of our country had those people only been able to grow potatoes over there.
Right.
Would there be no John Kennedy?
The British would have been in trouble. Because don't you think the Irish would have eventually left the island and gone after them?
Huh?
Like when the Irish left and went to the New World,
yeah.
they were so desperate.
Yeah.
They just had to come to the New World and look at what they've helped create.
Yes.
But Just imagine, had there not been a new world, don't you think the British would have been in trouble, and eventually the Irish would have said, all right, let's go take these people out?
Well, we'll never know the
answer. King and queen
We'll never
nonsense.
Know the answer to that question, but king history is rife with all kinds of what-ifs.
Yeah.
And that's certainly...
Well, what if my relatives would have gone to, I don't know, like...
Cleveland.
San Diego.
Well, yeah.
Like, what, could you imagine any better weather than San Diego?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, but yeah, I mean, you would still have never won a World Series.
No. Hey, I was speaking of history and in St. Louis. I was on the Hill yesterday.
Oh.
There was a bike race that's going on in town.
Is that the nude bike race?
No, that happened a couple weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
This is some type of professional bike race.
Yeah.
That's around this time. It's a four-day series. I think they were on the Hill. I think they were in the Grove, maybe down Lafayette Square. And today, they're up in Florissant. But it's a bike race, professional bike racers, racing the streets. But they shut down the entire Hill. Good friend of ours, Jane Duker, you know her. I went by her house.
Yeah.
She had a big spread of everything.
She did, though.
Went by a couple other homes, ran into the police chief of St. Louis.
There
ran
he was.
Into elected officials, just people out enjoying the neighborhood. And this bike race, man, it was intense.
How many bikes?
Well, there were different series. So there was a women's pro, a men's pro, a women's under a certain age. So I was seeing the last three races, and I would say in any given race, there appeared to be 75 to 100 racers.
Hmm.
And they were, I mean, it was first class, John. They had it all, you know, the keeping you out from getting out in the street, what do they call those? You know, like bike rack everywhere. And they had the signs, and then they were, you know, dinging the cowbells, you know, because that's what you do in bike racing.
You ding the cowbells.
People go by you. They just make a lot of noise.
Sounds lovely.
I don't know how you know if you're a bike racer that somebody's cheering for you.
Well, if there's one thing.
Because you're going by like 50 miles an hour.
If there's one thing we know for sure, there was one race that Michael Kelly was particularly paying attention to, and that would be the women under a certain age.
Well, no, they were pro women, and they, I'm telling you right now, they could ride a bike but a lot faster than I could drive a car. And then, John, they were whipping by.
They're whipping by.
Yeah, so they have these circles. You know, it's a giant circle, maybe a couple-mile track that they've done through the whole. So when they're making the turn, and I happen to be at a place where they make two turns,
oh,
they're, like, leaning in. You could, when they were going by, I could have, like, reached out and touched them. Like, it was
probably not advisable.
No, of course not. But I mean, and they're whipping by at a fast pace.
How fast?
40-50 miles an hour. Does that
50
sound
miles
right?
an hour
I don't
on a
know,
bike?
40 miles an hour.
You
does
can't
that sound
you
right?
can't go 50 miles an hour.
What do you think a bike does when like when it's going fast?
25 miles an hour.
No, this had to have been faster.
436-7900. 436-7900. Yeah. We need to step aside. You've got the weather to read, but we're going to do something first before we do that, and then we're going to come back and do something else, and then for the rest of the show, all kinds of something is going to be happening right here on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
It's John Hancock and Michael Kelly. We'll take you all the way till noon today. We got Cardinal baseball coming at you later. The Oakland Athletics, no longer going to be Oakland here soon.
That's right.
They'll be Las Vegas.
Well, they're in Sacramento now. They're playing their home games.
They're still calling them Oakland, though, aren't they?
No, they're calling them the Athletics.
Really?
That's what they're calling them.
Poor Oakland, man.
Poor Sacramento.
Football team, baseball team.
Sacramento's got a team, and they don't even call them the Sacramento. And they're going to be there again next year, and I guess it'll be the 2027 season, if there is one, that they will relocate and be the Vegas Athletics, which will be 1, 2, 3, 4, their fifth hometown as the Athletics.
Wow.
You got the Philadelphia A's.
Okay.
Coached and managed for 50 years by Connie Mack.
Okay.
Whose grandson became the senator from Florida.
Okay.
Interesting.
Nice.
The Philadelphia A's then moved to Kansas City for a few seasons. They were the Kansas City A's. That's where Reggie Jackson made his big league debut as a member of the Kansas City A's in the 1960s. And from Kansas City, then they moved to Oakland. So I guess, no, this will technically be their fourth city.
Right.
Yeah.
Impressive that you know all that.
Well, it's a little baseball history.
When it comes to useless information, hey, speaking of relocating, taking things away from people, we're going to do the same thing right here in Missouri, John. You remember President Trump, back when he used to be seen, had said that Missouri is going to do redistricting. They're going to take us from a 6-2 map to a 7-1 map. What's that mean? Right now, there's 6 Republican seats and 2 Democrat seats. They would like to redraw the Kansas City area so that the city and the greater Kansas City area would be represented by 3 different congresspeople that go almost 150 miles from the city. Why would you do that? Well, that way you can divide those Democrats up and get one more Republican seat, making us a 7-1 map. Mike Kehoe, disappointingly, is going to play along with this. What say you?
Well, you know, this is all playing out. Texas has redrawn their lines, and they have presumably added 5 Republican seats to their congressional delegation. California now has passed a law allowing them to go to a vote of the people so that the vote of the people will allow the legislature to redraw their maps that would add, ostensibly, 5 Democratic seats. And there's this effort across the country that the White House is spearheading to get Republican states to redraw their maps. Missouri is one. Indiana is another. And potentially you could see other states, and then you could potentially see other Democratic states, maybe Illinois, maybe Maryland, that would jump into this whole thing, too. I don't like it. And, you know, we have not without disruption, but for the most part, congressional lines are drawn every 10 years after the census comes out. You get a new population breakdown. Congressional districts under the rulings under the Constitution have to be very close to equal number of people. There's a little margin of error. I forget what the percentage is. But the numbers of people living in those districts have to be relatively the same under the principle of one person, one vote. And that's a process. It's a political process. It's done every decade. There have been some exceptions to that over the course of history. William McKinley's seat in Ohio was redrawn midterm back in the late 19th century. But for the most part, these decennial census have dictated how congressional apportionment goes, how many seats each state is awarded, and then congressional redistricting, how they are drawn. So when we are upending that tradition by redrawing maps in the middle of a census era, I think it's opening a door to a whole lot of things that would be very unfortunate for the country, because unlike most of our history now, most of the states in this country have a governor, a state house, and a state senate all led by one party, whether that be Democrat or Republican. For most of our history, the leadership has been divided. You'll have a Republican governor and a Democratic House and a Democratic or Republican Senate or vice versa. But now the vast majority of the nation has one party in control of all 3 of those entities. So there's no end potentially to how many times seats can be redrawn and maps can be redone. And whoever's in charge is calling the tune. That's very disruptive for democracy. And so I don't like this approach. I think that, and I don't think it's necessarily going to work out the way Republicans hope it's going to work out, because it's going to end up being something of a wash. Maybe if everything goes just right, you could gain a net of, I've seen estimates, a net of about 10 Republican seats in Congress. And that's not going to, if history is any kind of guide, that's not going to be enough to hold on to the House of Representatives in a midterm where the Republicans have the White House and both houses of Congress.
Yeah, and that's from the macro sense, and that's where this decision's being made and forced on Mike Kehoe. Having said that, Mike Kehoe didn't have to go along with it. In fact, he was a part of the compromise that brought us the map that we have right now.
3 years ago,
and now he's saying we have to redraw it. John, well, like it, love it, hate it, 40% plus of the people in the state of Missouri identify as Democrats. And we see that when it comes to statewide votes. Sure, we're a solidly red state.
Yep.
But one could not argue that we don't have a sizable proportion of Democrats, and now to be represented by one congressional district. I get it. This is what's happening in Illinois. This is what's happening in Texas. This is what we're doing. But I don't think it's truly reflective of the states that we live in anymore. I mean, Dallas is just a couple of hairs away. I mean, Dallas, not Dallas, Texas, is a couple of hairs away from potentially becoming a Democratic state. I mean, because the votes are that close when it comes to statewide elections. It's close enough. It's not, these aren't blowouts. I mean, this could change one way or another. And I just don't see what we're doing here, why it's good for the state of Missouri to play this game of essentially alienating some folks.
I don't know that you got much of a choice. I mean, if the president of the United States calls and says we need to do this, I think it's very hard to say no to that. And this president certainly has exhibited the ability to go after people of his own party vociferously. So I don't, I mean, I think Governor Kehoe basically has to call a special session. Now it's going to be up to the General Assembly to pass the map. Democrats aren't going to be happy at all. And that could cause some real tension in the legislature for the next year or two or more.
Democrats throughout the country tend to be packed in the urban areas, right? Most of your Democrats come from the major urban and suburban areas. So in Kansas City, we have Emmanuel Cleaver over there that represents a sizable population of people identified as Democrats. To fix this problem and to bust that up, John, they've got to share those Democrats with some other safer Republican seats. Is there a chance that in a swing election where we know the Republicans will lose seats, we know the Republicans are losing votes, we see President Trump's approval rating now in the mid-30s, is there a chance that they may wind up poisoning their own well?
Good.
And taking some safe Republican seat?
Good.
And in a funky election, bringing in a Democrat?
Could. I don't think that's likely to happen in Missouri, at least under the map that I have looked at that is assumed is going to be passed in the state. But you do, by definition, if you've got a district that's 65-70% Democrat, and you chop that up three ways, then you're putting into three Republican districts, you're putting a big chunk of Democratic voters in at least two, if not three of them. And so what was a 58 or 60% Republican district is now a 56 or 54% Republican district. And once you get into the under 55,
hello,
those districts,
anything can happen,
can flip based on the passion of the electorate that turns out. And midterm elections are very notorious for the party out of power has the incentive and the passion. They turn out, the party in power less so. So if you get a little bit of shift in the partisan turnout on election day, then, yeah, in theory, what you're saying is true. There are some of these districts that are drawn to be 53% Republican that could be lost in a midterm if Donald Trump's popularity is low.
One of the things that I appreciate about you and I is that we can see the larger political game, but realize that it probably isn't a good thing for Missouri long term to be doing this. And I think there was some acknowledgement there that, I mean, is this healthy? Is this the way to run a democracy?
No, it's not. And because you rarely do something once in politics. And I don't know that anyone has contemplated a wholesale redistricting midstream for multiple numbers of states. That's, there's a whole lot of things that are unprecedented in today's politics. This is one of them. And once you've done that, then when the other side's in power and the other side's facing a midterm, and chances are the other side's going to be in power sooner rather than later, what's to stop you from doing this again? And the answer to that is nothing. Now, the only thing that could stop it, and I hope it happens, is that Congress could pass a law.
Right. Not this one.
But Congress could pass a law at some point that would require redistricting only be done once a decade. That would solve the ongoing problem here. But unless and until that happens, then yeah, I think you're looking at this history repeating itself, maybe in 10 years, maybe in 20 years, who knows?
Let's just hope we don't have to have a crazy reset moment that tries to make us do normal stuff again. It was called the Civil War before, right? We wound up having laws that came in to keep some of the stuff that we had put in place that allowed it all to go down. Hey, he's John Hancock. I'm Michael Kelly. When we come back, college football.
Yeah.
Back on the scene. Some games last night and an interesting one tonight. After this, KMOX. Yes, the beautiful symphony, John. It wasn't so beautiful for God's team last night, the Lord's team. Notre Dame defeated at the last minute against Miami.
I don't think they're the Lord's team.
They are. Trust me, we have touchdown Jesus. Mm-hmm. The number one and number three team went at it yesterday, too, Texas and Ohio State. Ohio State toppled Texas. We had LSU beat Clemson. Lots of upsets that Alabama beat by Florida State handily.
Yeah.
So this is just week one, and we've seen four in the top 10 already go down.
I'll tell you what, man. Alabama, you know, they've been such a juggernaut for so many years. Then the coach retires.
Right.
And they seem to be a shadow of their former selves. I don't think that team's going to ascend again.
Oh, come on. Of course it will ascend again. They've got money. They've got history. They've got institution. But, I mean, don't you think they're in the same place that New England finds itself in, a post-Brady, post-Belichick world where you were on such an incredible wave for so long, it's impossible to sustain that?
I don't know. All I know is that in the entire career of Coach Saban, they lost four games over that time to unranked teams. They've already lost, four already under this new coach in his second season or third season. So, that's a program that is on the decline.
I'd be all right with that.
Did you see our
Are you okay with that, though? Because, like, some people, you're not an Alabama nut, are you?
No, I don't like I like to see other people, you know, hit the pinata.
So, I mean, even the Ohio State and the Michigans,
yeah,
you know, after a while, I'm done with them, too.
I
agree. Notre Dame would be the one exception because.
Well, they haven't won a title
Notre
in
Dame,
forever.
They're Irish.
LSU looked pretty good, you know. We'll see what happens. Florida State, who only won two games last year. They defeated Alabama. No, they didn't. Who did Florida State beat?
They beat Alabama.
No, that was Ohio State that beat Alabama.
Oh, Texas beat Ohio.
You're right. It was Florida State that beat Alabama, and they only won. That's right. They only won two games last year.
Right.
So, we'll see how that's all going to work out.
When you're watching these games, I don't know. It feels like my brain has shifted even in the last 4 or 5 years. I no longer feel like I'm watching kids. I feel like I'm watching professionals.
Well, you are. I mean, they're making money. They're getting paid. They're buying houses and cars.
They're not going to school anymore, are they?
Well, some of them I hope are, because most of them aren't going to make a career in the NFL. Although I want to say, I know we're getting a little short on time, but did you see our Missouri Tigers?
Well, they beat Parkway.
Parkway West. They took them out.
But Parkway did get a couple of points on the board.
And they got one touchdown with 22 seconds left.
Yeah.
Seriously, though, I think Eli Drinkwitz, I don't know if we're going to be able to keep him for the long term, because I think he's going to become a very hot coaching commodity out there, especially if the Tigers are able to do it again, if they can win another 9 or 10 games this year, and their schedule is conducive to that. Now, a big test coming up against Kansas this coming Saturday for the Missouri Tigers. But their first six games of the season are at home.
What? How does that work?
And
I mean, when are they having their homecoming? After the first of the year?
Yeah, who knows? But their first six games are at home. And they're going to play some weaker opponents. Their SEC schedule is not that tough. I guess Alabama's on it. They've got an opportunity here, I think, to make the college football playoffs. And if this program makes the college football playoffs,
that's a huge boost.
I think Eli Drinkwitz is
you think somebody big nabs him up, maybe at Alabama. They're like, hey, this guy knows how to win.
Could be.
Really?
Stranger things have happened.
Well, I mean, Notre Dame, Alabama, Michigan, Ohio State. Well, aren't those the big schools to go?
Anyone
to
out there know the last Mizzou coach to go to Notre Dame? Branch Rickey,
no.
The great coach of the Missouri Tigers.
No, who was it?
Dan Devine.
I knew it was one of those
lefty. Replaced Al Onofrio and became the Mizzou coach. It's Michael Kelly, John Hancock, Matt Pauley joins us next on KMOX.